All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And now we're switching our focus to the energy sector, oil and natural gas, as we're chatting with Joseph Schachter. Joseph is the founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report, as well as writes the Ion Energy Report, which is now on Substack. The Schachter Energy Report focuses a bit more on the companies, while Ion Energy focuses on more the macro, what's going on in the oil and natural gas space. And Joseph, because it's the end of the year as we're recording this before New Year's Day, we are going to recap 2025 and look into 2026. We've been chatting with you off mic, and quite frankly, I was coming into this call thinking that the oil sector has been pretty disappointing. Technically, oil traded at the lowest price level that it has all year in December, bounced a little bit in the later part of December. But oil's been really in a downtrend since the highs in 2022, and prices have been broadly cut in half over that period. Really seems like the oil sector just continues to be under this, in a way, relentless pressure. But the stocks, weirdly enough, are holding up quite well. And as we were talking off mic, a number of winners in the oil sector. So, Joseph, just from the oil price aspect, look, it's been a multi-year downtrend. Is 2026 finally going to turn this downtrend?
Well, let's start, recapping 2025. If you recall, at the beginning of the year, price of oil was $79. And I started seeing that there was an inventory build in the United States. Demand was weakening for gasoline and other products. And we said there was going to be a correction. And then in March, April, the price of oil went down to $56. And we have three items on our checklist for buy and our table pounding buy signals. And one of them is the price of oil going below economics, which if you look at the Federal Reserve of Dallas, they have a sheets in their presentations. And it comes in the mid-60s, some as low as, 58, some as, 70 for the different basins. But the average is in the mid-60s for the break-even. Well, we got below that. The second one was we were looking for the S&P TSX Energy Index to go below 240, and the index at the time was trading at the high of the year was, at the beginning of the year was 288, and it went down to 214. It spiked down below the 240 target, and we were using that in April to be signaling the buy signal. The third one is the S&P Energy Bullish Percentage Index that we've talked about many, many times, and it was trading around 80% in January. And we said that we thought it would go down below 10% for a buy, below 5% for a table pounding buy, and it went down to 0%. The only time in the history of the index that it went down to 0%. It went in 2008 to below 5%, 3.7, and in 2020 it went down to the 4% level. So this was a fabulous buy signal and gave me the confirmation and the confidence to stay table pounding buy. We put out a lot of buy recommendations then, and we said buy the sector. And as you said, the price of oil has done poorly, but the stocks were so ridiculously cheap, trading under 2x cash flow, a third of NAV. I'll give you a few examples. On the natural gas side, things like Birchcliff were trading at 470. They're now 750. Bonterra, which is a natural gas, oil and natural gas producer, 256 up to 458. One of the stars was in play, trading at 650, now at 1225. Hemisphere, a name that you guys know, great dividend, a penny a month, plus 2-3 cent specials during the year. So, we're talking an 18 cent dividend. The stock was trading at the beginning of the year or at the low of the year at $1.64, and now it's $1.97. So, you picked up 30 cents in capital gain, you picked up 18 cents in dividends. That's a home run for yield investors. So, another one was a name that we covered, that Strathcona, which had the natural gas assets and sold them to ARC and to Tourmaline, but the stock was trading at $23. And the high for the year was 45, and they just paid a $10 return of capital, just like Paramount did, when they sold assets to Ovintiv. So there's been a lot of home runs in the sector. You just needed to know where they are. The bargains were there. Sure, you can look at some names and say they didn't move at all. But the reality is, if you're a stock picker, which is what we are, and you focus on the names that are cheap and you watch the companies and you go see the companies, and there's going to be home runs. And I would think that the names I mentioned leading by, you know, in play and Strathcona, you know, you got to say those were home runs in a year when everybody said gold and silver were the only places in AI. The reality is the energy wasn't so shabby if you were in the right areas.
Well, just all the more reason for folks listening in to check out the links down below for Joseph's different publications, because I do think it was a stock picker's market. And a lot of those stocks we've been talking about with you all year long, and you were highlighting for our listeners why you thought the value proposition was so promising. Let me ask you this, Joseph. If you think that we're going to have an inverse year next year, you know, we went from, let's just say, almost $80 a barrel down to below 60. If we flip that script and go from a little under 60 to back near 80 again, what does that mean for the oil stocks in that environment? Have they priced some of that in already, or are there hedges in place that would come off? What would a move from 57 crude to $80 crude do for these oil stocks?
Well, what I'm finding quite amusing is that a lot of the companies, when they're talking about 2026, and most of them probably are going to wait till January, February to put out, once they see the reserve reports, then they'll put out their guidance. But the reality is a lot of them are shoving $55, other $60 in their 2026 forecast. I'm using $70. I think, you know, we're going to see a rising price environment throughout the year. And just to give you an idea of what I'm thinking, I think Q1, we're going to be down. We might see a correction down to 52. So we're 57 or so right now, 57.80 now, with a range of, you know, 52 to 66. Q2, I think we'll go from a range of, you know, 62 to 72. So we'll peak over 70 again. In Q3, I think we'll range between $68 and $78 WTI, and then Q4, $74 to $84, so a peak over $80 in Q4. That's not in the market. Nobody believes that. Everybody is using way lower numbers, and even the big boys in the States are using like $60 WTI, and most people talk about a 3-4 million barrel overhang. That's bullshit, and we can go through that later. There is no overhang in the market, and inventories are not, you know, excessive as another, the bears are running. Like, there's three components to it, and one component, yes, is higher than normal, but the other two are not. So if you want to go through that, we can do that. But the bottom line is, I think that people are going to be surprised that OPEC does not have the production capacity to raise volumes very much. I think we're going to see a tariff resolution, which means global trade will stabilize and we'll start seeing growth there, which means more demand. And if we really do want to go and have more data centers and increase the electrical grid in the industrialized world, and, you know, we're going to need more copper, nickel, aluminum, all these things, rare earths. And that's going to come from the third world, and they're going to want to have a better sustainable quality of life, which means they're going to use more energy. And to build those facilities, you're going to need more energy. And the people working there are going to want to have, you know, running water, electricity in their homes. They're going to want to drive cars instead of bicycles and mopeds. So I think that the whole negative story is going to change. Like, think about the beginning of the year when we're $79. Everybody was saying shortage, and, you know, the price of oil is going to go up. And then, you know, then they started swinging to this 3-4 million barrel negative scenario. I think they're going to swing back to the fact that OPEC's got no more, inventories are coming down, and the bullish scenario comes back. And, you know, people don't realize how quickly things can change. And my comment to them is, just look what happened to gold and silver. You know, look what happened in 2025. All of a sudden, people realized, number one, it's a shortage. Number two, people don't trust the currencies anymore, especially the U.S. dollar, which was down, you know, on the year. And they went into gold first and silver second, and then silver took off. So I think we're going to see, you know, we've seen natural gas take off. It's 460. It had a high of 550. You know, last year was a $2 scenario, and it's taken off. So natural gas is leading the patch right now. And we have more data. We have more LNG plants coming on in the States. We have plant LNG Canada's over a BCF heading to 2 in Q2. We got all the arguments in favor of things picking up. And there's data centers being built in Alberta, which means more demand within the province. So I think the story in natural gas is the best of the two, but I think oil is also going to be a star. And remember, our companies are trading at 2 and 3 times cash flow on depressed commodity prices. You plug in $70 oil for the year and $80 annualized in Q4, you're talking a massive increase in cash flow. And if that happens, you're going to see multiples expand. So I'm looking for a lot of stocks in 2026 to be up 50 to 100%. And maybe some even better than that if they really have success with their production levels. So, I think that people should really take a serious look at the sector. You can go to large cap names. There's the big ones like Tourmaline and ARC. On the oil side, you can look at the Strathcona's and White Caps of the world. On the drilling side, you can look at Precision Drilling and Ensign and Total Energy. There's lots of places. And then on the international side, you can look at Valora, Gran Tierra. There's so many different places to go, Alvo Petro. And so we think that there's a massive shopping spree available. Again, people should decide what's appropriate for them based on the liquidity, dividend requirements that they have, market cap that they have. But we cover 31 companies. We're going to add one new one in our January issue because we have 3 takeovers in the last 2 or 3 months. We lost Kuwaitno for a takeover. We lost NuVista on a takeover. And we lost Step Energy on a takeover. So we're looking to add additional names that we see as bargains that can make people a lot of money in 2026 and the years thereafter.
So, Joseph, it sounds like a totally different year next year, and even from the last couple of years in the oil space. And yes, I understand a few stocks have done well over the last few years, but quite frankly, it hasn't been like the gold or silver space where everything has moved up multiples from where it was earlier this year, even a couple of years ago. Look, you shared with us real quickly there some of the stocks that you like, but let's spend a bit more time on different stages, different types of stocks in the sector, because that's what our listeners really like to hear. So first and foremost, large caps, the balance between U.S. large caps or Canadian large caps, where do you see the best opportunities in those types of stocks?
Well, the American stocks are cheap, but the Canadians are much, much cheaper. And there's two reasons why we're cheaper. One, the political situation in Canada. People aren't sure if they believe Carney, Prime Minister Carney, and what they're going to do. This whole carbon capture thing, is there going to be a pipeline west? There's still a lot of debate on that. So, we are cheaper for that reason on the political side. And then on the other side of it is we really aren't having the growth right now in the volumes of the sector, while the U.S. numbers in many cases are showing volume growth because of the LNG takeaway in the U.S. South. We really haven't seen that until LNG Canada. So when we see the Q4 results coming out February, March of 2026, I don't think you're going to see many companies, unless those made acquisitions, are going to show comparisons that are positive versus Q4 of a year ago or Q3 of 2025. So I think that's going to be a holding pattern for the stocks until they start showing more production growth, cash flow growth, and those that still have debt problems, that they knock the debt down to under 1x debt to cash flow. So there still are a few companies with debt problems, but they're all focused on paying it down. Those that are in very healthy shape are all talking about, NCIBs, normal course issuer bids, buying back their stock. We haven't talked about Trican on the service sector, but they've bought back, since they announced their NCIB, they've bought back more than half their shares. So the remaining shares, there's massive value there. It's trading at 591. The low for the year in 2025 was 369. So it's had a good year, paying you a dividend, and there's less shares outstanding. So as the company does well in the outlying years, that's going to be incremental to less and less number of shares, which is positive. So let's go to the big cap names. And again, any company that I'm talking about, big cap, is over $2 billion in Canada. The largest is Tourmaline, $24.6 billion. They produce in Q3 635,000 BOEs a day. They have a base dividend of $2.50 a quarter. So we really think that's an attractive name for people to look at. And, we're sitting with Tourmaline, an $80 one-year target and a $150 bull market peak target. Birchcliff on the natural gas side, we're looking at a $2 billion market cap. We're looking at a $9 target. As I mentioned, the stock had a very good run from the year. Its low for the year was 471, 754. We'd like to see that back off, you know, below, you know, 6.25. If I'm right about a market correction, that could happen. And we're sitting with a $9 one-year target and a $25 market peak target. And I think it's going to get taken over. There's, you know, names like Trican that we mentioned, Vermilion Energy, which is more oily, you know, a $2 billion market cap. The stock, you know, is trading. It's had a decent year. The low for Whitecap was 687. It's now 1150. And we have a target on Whitecap of $14 this year, 25 bull market peak. So you can see there's some great names. But the important thing to think about is dividends. You know, we've talked about Freehold before. It's trading, the last count I did for my run, 7.1% dividend yield. You have Whitecap with a 6.3% dividend yield. And then if you go to names like Marin Energy, which is a $1.2 billion market cap, a 10.9% dividend yield, Surge Energy, which, you know, you guys know very well, $700 million market cap, 7.3% dividend yield, monthly dividend equal to 52 cents annualized. And on the stock on Surge, the low for the year was 437. It's now 691, and the high of the year 785. So another story that, you know, if you want dividend income and market cap and liquidity, you want that. If you're looking for growth stories, there are names that can fit that bill, which we really think people should look at. And growth is hard to find in the sector. So I think that's something that we're looking at in our names. And then the service sector, you know, because if the industry does well and utilization goes up, day rates go up, both for fracking and drilling units and service rig units. And that's going to be a leverage to make those stocks do well. And, you know, as we talked, you know, Precision, Ensign, Total Energy, there's a lot of names there. Total has a dividend. The others do not. Moderate dividend, but still a dividend of, you know, of 2.6%. So there's lots of things for people to look at. And, you know, on the international side, we like names like Valura, which is offshore Thailand. We like Alvopetro, which is onshore Brazil and some production in Canada. Gran Tierra, which is Colombia, Ecuador, and Canada. So there's lots of ways for investors to invest in the patch. And, you know, I think that if I'm right about the price of oil getting over 70, I think that's going to be the catalyst for the stocks to react, which is Q2. And then in Q3, as we start seeing 70s on a consistent basis, and then that's going to be when I think multiples start expanding. And really in Q4, when they see an 80 handle, that's when you're going to really see the trajectory of the stocks take up. So you want to buy them in Q1 if we have this correction. My guess is it could be between February, March, April, down below 50s, 54, 52, 54 at the low for oil. I think the S&P TSX Energy Index, which is now at 297, goes below 240. And the S&P Energy Bullish Percentage Index, which has come off 70%, it's 49% now. I think it gets below 10%. And with a little bit of luck, if it gets below 5%, it makes my conviction even higher.
Well, Joseph, you covered a lot of ground there with the big caps, the dividend-paying stocks, some of the service companies, international. When you hit growth, though, you kind of shot through it. So let's focus on the growth names, the ones that have the best growth wedge for 2026.
Well, that's where I have a little bit of a problem, because a lot of them this year, because natural gas prices were very low, you didn't see much growth. But I'll give you a few that do have growth, you know, into the end of this year and then much more in 2026. Paramount Resources, which is, you know, sold assets to Ovintiv, but the remaining assets, they've got a very strong growth profile to them. So we like that name. You know, Whitecap Resources has got growth planned of, you know, 5% in their numbers. Bonterra, we see much more growth in 2026 than in 2025. Obsidian Energy, after their sale to InPlay, they're now, from their base after the sale, are showing signs of growth. Pinecliff, which didn't do any drilling in 2025, held off because they were waiting for gas prices to recover. They're now starting to drill again, and we'll see the results starting in Q1. Surge Energy, which has had kind of flattish production, they should start showing some growth in 2026. And then you go to, you know, other names. InPlay Oil will probably have flattish production in this year, but 2026, you know, as they get their debt down, they're going to start showing some growth. Petrus is another small cap, 250 million. That's, 9,000, BOEs, 9,800 BOEs a day in Q3, could punch through 10,000. Rubellite, which is, 12,400 BOEs a day, mostly clear water, heavy oil. They should start showing some growth. So, and then Yengara Resources, which is Cardium, 9,500 BOEs a day. They should show some, a little bit of growth. So 2026 is where the growth comes in. For companies that had debt, their focus will be on early part of 26, first half, pay down debt, and then the second half, start drilling. And as I mentioned, Pine Cliff has already started drilling because we're looking at, over $3 AECO right now, which they can make money on. So they're also looking at light oil prospects that have natural gas as well. So they're looking at dual product performers in their drilling program. And Phil Hodge, I think you guys know, you've interviewed him many times. He was very prudent during the tough years, and now he's pressing on the gas pedal rather than the brakes.
Okay, Joseph, a lot of companies there to consider. How about ones that are more of a blend of oil and natural gas? If natural gas, since that has done well, if that has a positive outlook as well, do you like those stocks that are more less pure play, more, I guess, balance between the two?
Well, if you look at Paramount, it's 48% liquids, 52% natural gas. Vermilion is 33, oil 67. Whitecap is 61, 39. Bonterra is 51 liquids, 49 natural gas. I'm just going through the mix here, and I'll read off the ones that are potentially mixed. Questair, 52% liquids, 48 natural gas. And then you've got Yengara, 42% liquids, 58% natural gas. So a few of those there that have the mix that can do well in 2026 with higher natural gas prices. I'm using, I think this year, the average for natural gas is going to be somewhere in the 240, 250 range. Again, I don't have the Q4 numbers now, but, the numbers were in that handle. I'm using 325 in my numbers. We're right now 315 in AECO today, and I think we're going to see better pricing in the second half of 26 because LNG Canada will be running full out. Data centers will be on using more gas, and I think storage will come down sharply. We're seeing, quite a bit of storage down in the States. I pulled out the numbers from EIA today, and we just had another 166 BCF taken out of storage, 3.4 TCF now, and it's 3.6% below a year ago, which was 3.54. The one that I've been waiting for is get below the five-year average, and this week it happened, down 0.7% to 3.43 TCF. And that, if you remember, at the beginning of the year was 8 or 9% above the five-year average. We're now, for the first time, below that five-year average, which sets up natural gas to be a very strong performer, in the U.S. market, NYMEX, in 2026. And if that's the case, they'll be drawing from Canada because they need it. And then Canada will be drawing more to the West Coast because the LNG is there. And then data centers, electricity needs. I think the bad news for natural gas in Canada, stranded gas, is now over. And I think we'll see that being the reason. And that's the reason why some of the names like NuVista got taken over. It was $11 in April when we recommended it, and it got taken out at $18 by Ovintiv. They bought out from Paramount. They bought NuVista out because Ovintiv, the old Encana, wants to be a very big player in the Montney and the Duvernay and wants to be a very big player in the export market to LNG.
Well, Joseph, that brings up an interesting point about capacity and pipelines, and some of the oil service companies, benefit because their pipelines are full. But is there opportunity for growth in pipelines? Could you maybe speak about that aspect of Canada and getting more gas or fluids to different areas with pipelines?
Well, the problem is the costs of them have just gone, stratigraphic. On the oil TMX, how that was like a four bagger, more than the initial estimates. Coastal gas was a massive overrun, and TransCanada had to take a big write down. Small tweaks, adding compression, you can do that and keep the costs under control, assuming, you can get Caterpillar equipment, which is, an 18-month lag now, given the backlog they have. So I don't really see major pipeline expansions in Canada for a number of reasons. One, the cost overrun. Two, the federal government not so keen on liquids. And number three, the First Nations have to buy in. And right now, the First Nations have said no dice for an oil line in the northern part of BC. And add one more. The premier of BC doesn't like the idea either and is crapping on that idea.
Yeah, it's kind of a mess over on the West Coast. And hey, I live in Vancouver. It's always kind of disappointing to read what's going on. But one more, I guess, on the stock front is M&A. You even mentioned you had, what, three recent takeovers just in the stocks that you cover. What's your outlook for M&A into 2026?
Well, as we see the more the FIDs, final investment decisions made on LNG Canada 2, which will add another 2 BCF, you know, which could come on before the end of the decade because the basic facilities are there. Then you've got the issue of, Kissimmee, Cedar, all of these pipelines, you know, get their final decision and start doing construction. Then you're going to have more takeaway capacity and they're going to want to lock in 20, 25 year contracts for the gas so that they can export and have export contracts to Asia, to South Korea, to Japan, to China, to wherever. And so we're going to see more and more M&A and more consolidation of the plays, you know, going forward in the next few years. And, you know, both the Montney, the Duvernay, and, you know, all the way from, you know, West 5 in Alberta, all the way into Northeast BC, you know, the whole fairway is there. And there are smaller players that can be consolidated, you know, that potentially Birchcliff, Kelt, you know, there's so many names you could throw out there that advantage that all could be taken over if there's a merger mania phase and people need to lock in long-term reserves. That all will help the sector going into the next few years. And I think also if you are in an area, you know, like the Charlie Lake, which is light oil, and people want that play and they want to own light oil because differentials widen between light and heavy, then you're going to see, consolidation of that. And companies that have pieces of the Charlie are going to see themselves and people knocking on the door to say, look, I want to consolidate the land. I want to consolidate the play, lower the operating costs, make more money. And, you know, that's the, you know, where do you find oil? Wherever there's oil, you know, next to you, you know, instead of going to find a whole new play is just consolidate the plays around you.
All right, Joseph, we'll wrap it up here. Thank you so much for taking all that time you did with us last year in 2025 and now early on in 2026. Sounds like it could be a very different year for the oil sector. And again, it's just been interesting to see broadly the stocks hold up better as the oil price has been drifting lower and lower year after year. Hey, we're going to keep following up with you throughout this year and I hope everybody does click that link in the show notes to visit your website, learn more about the Schachter Energy Report and Ion Energy, and sign up with you. So, Joseph, thank you very much for your time on this weekend show. Happy New Year, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. Hope you all had a very happy New Year and are looking forward to 2026.
Happy New Year, everyone.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.